stand by. Good day, everyone, and thank you for your patience. Good day, and welcome to the IBM IMS System Administrators Conference. We haven't forgotten you, conference call. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. Now, at this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I'd like to turn the conference over to Diana McCollum. Ms. McCollum, please go ahead.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. I am the Worldwide IM Tools Product Manager, and I'm very excited about offering this teleconference to you today. I think you'll walk away with some wonderful information. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to our speaker, Janet LeBlanc. We're pleased that Janet comes from the Silicon Valley Lab and is a certified IMS Tools Technical Specialist. With that, Janet.
Good morning. I'm glad you could join me today. Hopefully you all have access to the presentation. And at this point, I'd like to move to the second slide to talk a little bit about what I want to cover today. Kinds of problems that we want to be able to address with our solutions are things such as your system management issues. In general, these days, most of our IMS environments are up 24/7, so there's no time to have an outage to do sysgen. You want to be able to have your what is in core and what is in your mod blocks to be in sync. And in a lot of larger shops, and perhaps for that matter smaller shops also, there's a need to be able to allow programmers and DBAs the ability to create and test system changes because these days the system programmer can't do it all. The reality is in the V-Series environment, what we're starting to see is we're all getting older. And as we're getting older, we're starting to see people retire. And the new kids coming in from school frequently don't have any mainframe experience. And we're fortunate if they can move into the programmer's ranks. We're even more fortunate if they can do the leap into the DBA realm. But system programmer is a much bigger leap. The need to be able to have assembler skills, which is not taught anymore. It becomes a major issue. And then we're going to look at ETO. All the implementation issues, how much work it takes to be able to do an implementation if you're doing it from scratch manually. And then look at if we were to use a tool, how we could do that in a different way. Again, we're dealing with the lack of assembler skills or the concern that even if you have assembler skills in your shop, that the issue is what happens when the person who did the coding leaves, either through retirement or perhaps for a better opportunity elsewhere. The company is left with assembler code that was coded in-house, and no one left who knows how to maintain it. Moving to the next slide, we're now going to go into the sysgen issues. So we're going to talk about high-performance sysgen and try to address the problems that we've just discussed. On slide 4, the current version of high-performance sysgen was announced on June 7th of this year. Became generally available on June 17th. The previous version was version 1.1. Moving to slide 5, what we have incorporated that is new in this version is an ISPF interface. The ISPF interface is allowing us to be able to do such things as view our resource definitions, define sets of incremental changes to our sysgen, and be able to allow this capability to be propagated. We have to test out the proposed changes, determine whether or not they will work. We have to do the sysgen, and be able to keep track of what activity has been done, so we have to review a history log. And if we want to be able to recreate our sysgen source, we have to reverse the mod blocks or matrix to recreate it. Also provide an IMS command interface. And we're continuing to add new features to this tool, and we're going to be delivering them via the maintenance stream. And batch JCL gen of some of the previously batch processes will be available. Moving to slide 6. The tools I'm describing here are the tools that were available in version 1. In version 1, we had a FastSysGen, which was a high-performance tool for doing a mod block gen. We now have ISPS panels allowing us to do that. SysGen Merge and Clone, the merge function allowed you to create combined IMS system definitions for up to 64 IMS systems. The clone option let you build an additional system definition, including the MSC routing definition. And a SysGen Compare and Reverse, which would allow you to be able to compare two sets of mod blocks and matrix modules. Moving to slide 7. On this screen, I'm showing you the new ISPS interface that was added with version 2. At the bottom of the page, you see a data set defined, the IO8 PDF data set name. This is where we will be storing our resource update lists, which are used in options 2, 3, and 4. And a resource update list is basically a definition of a set of resource changes, so an add, a delete, or an update, of, for example, a database program, a transaction or route code. And this is viewed as being like an incremental change. So you are able to, in this way, do definitions of things as you need them. Moving to our next slide. So the options that you saw on that screen were the setup, which allowed you to be able to define your options for use of a specific system, so defining all your different IMS environments. The view will allow you to read the active mod blocks data set or your in-core. Validate will allow you to validate any SysGen source. FastGen, which via your ISPS screen will let you do an immediate gen. Reverse will allow you to be able to reverse your IMS SysGen and security gens. And it's going to be able to read the mod blocks or matrix data sets, or optionally also allow you to be able to read your in-core. History, we're going to maintain an audit trail for updating your IMS system, and then the command option to let you issue IMS commands. On slide 9, High-Performance SysGen, the new ISPS interface. I want to talk for a moment about the resource update list concept. This is an incremental change. It allows you to be able to add your resources, editing or deleting. And because it's ISPS-driven, you have the ability to be able to edit. You can verify, and this is optional, in order to be able to determine whether or not the proposed change actually is valid for a specific IMS subsystem. And then the install, which will be done on one IMS subsystem at a time, it's going to use ATPC to be able to do this function for you. Now moving to the next slide, slide 10. We have the ability to view our resource definitions. Now, When you move to this screen, you're going to be able to specify which resource type you want to view and what the source of the information is to be. You can choose to view the database, program, transaction, or route code definitions. You can also choose to view the information from the active ModBlox data set or to view the information from the running IMS control region in the in-core control block. When you select a resource type to view, a table shows all the resources of that type along with the IMS SysGen attributes of the resource definition. If you'll note at the top of the screen, there's an option that allows you to do a sort. And it will sort the list based on the column name that you specify. You can also view the resource definition detail in the IMS SysGen source macro for definitions. When viewing these, you can also select a resource and see the IMS SysGen definition for that resource and all associated resources. Moving to the next slide, slide 11. Here's another example of viewing the details of a resource definition. This time we're looking at a transaction definition. Again, the IMS SysGen macro is shown at the top of the screen, while the lower portion shows the values for each attribute of the definition. Now next, let's look at what happens if I actually want to be able to edit a resource update list. Option 2 is allowing you to be able to create, edit, delete, rename, verify, and install an IMS resource update list. Each of these is stored in the member as a member in the IOH PDS dataset that we saw specified at the bottom of the primary options menu. The first screen you see when you select option 2 shows all the update lists that exist. This screen is showing you the IMS ID, status, creation user ID, creation date, and install user ID. The status is going to show you the last operation that was successfully performed on the update list, verify or install. If an update list is edited after it's been verified, the status will change back to blank. Moving to the next slide, in order to create a new update list, you can enter select a name on the update list screen where the name you specify is a new member name. When you request to insert a new entry in an update list, this screen allows you to define what that entry will do. So you can specify a function such as add, delete, or update, and the resource type. Then if you choose not to enter a resource name, you will receive a blank screen. Entering a program name, for example, or a transaction name on the blank screen will cause it to populate all the attribute values for that program. You also have the capability of using a copy. The copy command provides you the capability to copy the attribute names from an existing resource rather than using a default set. On this screen, we're showing an example of where I would do a copy. You can see where at the top line on the command line, I'm doing copy add INV. After I hit enter, the values in all the value columns will be updated to reflect the current values for the transaction add INV. The transcode field will not be copied during the copy command. It will be left blank. You will, at that point in time, be able to put in what the new transcode name will be. Moving to the next slide, we're now going to look at option four. Option four is where we're doing an install of a resource update list. It's used to install the changes specified in a resource update list, and it works in the same way as the verify process. You can select the update list, and that's multiple, one or as many as you choose to, that you wish to install concurrently. The entries are then displayed. You type go on the command line and press enter to install the update. Prior to installing an update list, SysGen will perform an internal verify process to verify that the install will be able to proceed. When an install succeeds, in addition to updating the IMS system control block, the IMS mod blocks and matrix data sets are also updated to reflect the changes in the resource update list that were installed. Updating these data sets means that changes to resource definitions are going to be carried across IMS restarts and IMS cold starts. It will then be unnecessary to do any updates at the time that you're doing these restarts. The installation screen shows the modules in the mod blocks and matrix data sets that were updated and the status of the IMS online chain libraries before and after the process. Moving to the next slide, slide 15, we're looking at performing a foreground FastGen. We also we're providing an ISPF interface to the FastGen process that was available in version 1. This allows you to perform a modblocks IMS SysGen in a fraction of the time, about a 95% reduction in CPU time. Using the ISPF interface, you can specify the libraries, and the reports created will be placed in an output dataset name specified on the screen. Although we do feel that with the advent of the new process that we're now providing, this is probably a function that will not be used to the same degree it was in the past, since we now have the ability to do that all instantaneously using resource update lists. Option 7 provides us the ability to reverse the SysGen functions. So you're able with this to be able to generate macros that will reflect the in-core block from the running IMS system. You can also choose to do a reverse from the active modblocks data set or from a modblocks data set that you specify. You're also able to determine what objects, what resources you're going to do the reverse for. We did this in this manner because we felt that with people's current environment, they may want, for example, to be able to do the reverse of their databases from their active mod blocks because maybe they've done some changes in core that they do not want to be present. Perhaps all their transactions they would like to be from their in-core environment. This gives you the flexibility to be able to get the source in the form that you feel is most accurate for your environment. Moving to slide 17, we'll now see an example of the generated IMS SysGen macros. Moving to slide 18, again, we see now an example of the generated IMS security gen statements. On slide 19, we'll now start to look at the history log. High Performance System maintains a history log for each IMS system. This is an audit log, and it's used for only for reporting through the ISPF interface. It's never actually used by the IMS system. The reverse option of the history log allows you the capability to create an IMS system source statement that can be used to update your IMS system source. You can create source for updates that were installed using a date range, create source for all entries that have, for example, gen source equals no. The macros created by this function are then written to an output data set that you specify on the screen. The history log is a sequential file that can potentially run out of space, so it should be cleaned out of old and needed entries periodically. If the log does run out of space, installation of a resource update list will fail. However, no old entries are lost, and there's no impact at all to a running IMS system. This will not bring your IMS system down. You can delete log entries based on date and whether the gen source flag has been set to yes. You can also delete only command records or only IMS source update records or both. Now, the screen that we're currently looking at is a view of the history log. This view screen shows all the log records for an IMS system. It shows each individual resource update as well as any IMS commands issued to the SysGen option to issue an IMS command. The table shows the function, resource type, and resource name of the entry. Resource update list name where the entry was specified. The user ID and timestamp when the installation occurred. And a flag showing whether or not the IMS SysGen source has been updated to reflect the changes in the entry. You can also select an entry to see all the details of any of the updates or the full text of an IMS command that was issued. Moving to the next slide, slide 20, we're introducing a new function, the undo capability. So once entries have been selected, you can choose to have undo created. If you select an entry, you press the enter key with no updates on the screen, and you receive this screen, where a resource update list name must be specified. With this, it's going to create a resource update list that you can then run through to be able to undo any set of transactions or changes that you have done. Moving to the next slide, the IMS command. You can issue IMS commands using the SysGen option C. The output of the command is displayed on the screen. Commands other than the slash display commands are logged in the history log for auditing purposes. Moving to slide 22, just a quick review of the fast SysGen. This is, again, from the version 1 capability. This can be run either via batch job or it can be run from the ISPF screen. This allows you to be able to use FastGen to perform a mod blocks and security gen very quickly. Moving to slide 23. The online FastGen, only modblock changes are implemented by the online change process. So this is using, again, the functions that were in the version 1 product. Currently with version 2 using the ISPS interface, you recall, we're not using that process. On the next slide, on slide 24, the FastSysGen and batch requires JCL for processing. I've included some sample JCL. The sample JCL is included in the SAMP library. Move to the slide 25. I want to talk a little bit about the merge clone utility. Merge clone utility reads the INS blocks data sets and combines the definitions of up to 64 systems. After the process is completed, each IMS system will have the same set of application, transaction, and database definitions. Each application and transaction definition will have the same attributes across all the systems, with the possible exception of the sysID value. Each database definition will have the same attributes, with the possible exception of the access value. The merge clone program performs automatic generation of the sysID values. It does this by analyzing the PSB and determining which IMS region has the proper database access to meet the PSB procop requirements. For each IMS system where the procop requirements are met, the transaction is defined as local. For systems that do not meet the procop requirements, the sysID is added to the definition to route the message to an IMS where the requirements are met. Transaction routing can be forced by providing input to the merge clone program. Using control cards, you can specify on what systems the transaction must run. Moving to slide 26, the SysGen Compare utility. SysGen Compare analyzes and reports on the members present in each of the libraries, noting any size differences. It lists the number of each kind of resource defined in the two modblocks data set. It also provides a dump format listing of each control block that's different in the two modblocks data set or is present in only one data set. It's recommended that the initial run of FastGen be performed using test versions of the output modblocks and matrix data sets. This compare utility can then be used to compare the traditional IMS SysGen control blocks with those generated by the Fast SysGen process. Moving to the next slide, we'll see a sample of the output from the SysGen compare utility. We have recently accepted a requirement for the ISPS component to add the SysGen compare as an ISPS option so that you won't have to do this in a batch environment. The compare status that will come up will be identical asterisks, which means that there's a difference was found in the matrix module that doesn't affect the security definitions. Not present or different size. Moving to slide 28, the JCL in generator utility. It's strongly recommended that you run JCL in after any IMS SysGen, including a modblocks type SysGen. PTF maintenance to IMS stage 2 macros could result in SMPE installing updates to the staging modblocks. Because we are updating the mob blocks without creating a stage 2 job stream. The JCLN generator was created in order to enable you to create and run JCLN and create to make sure that the information on the mob blocks modules is current. Dispatch utility is available in the sample library. Moving to the next slide. In order to implement high-performance SysGen, we do not require any changes at all to IMS. There is no software resident in the IMS control region. Therefore, this can be installed without an IMS restart. We are using ATPC to communicate across MVS images, which allows you to create, verify, and install update lists on different MVS images. And we will also use ATPC, if available, to issue IMS commands. If ATPC is not installed, we will use a BMP to issue our IMS command. All of the features that were available in version 1 are still available. But this feature, including the modify prepare mod block fastgen command, but this feature does require software resident in the control region. However, this function is also available in the ISPS component without needing to do this. SysGen uses existing RACS facilities such as the IMS command authorization and new RACF resources for authorization to use the verify and install functions. This will allow you to be able to put any restrictions that you choose to on these capabilities. For example, in your organization, you may want to have give the ability to be able to create resource update lists and perhaps the ability to do verifies to your DBA or programmer organizations, but restrict the capability of doing the install to your system programming group. So moving to the next slide, slide 30. In summary, what we have provided with high-performance SysGen is the original utilities of the online FastGen and the batch FastGen, merge clone utility, and the compare and reverse. In addition, what we've done is create a new product in effect with the ISPF interface, providing incremental resource definitions, allowing you to be able to install those definitions in a very painless manner. You have to recreate your SysGen source from either your mod blocks or your in-core environment. You have to do SysGen testing and provided for an IMS command interface. Now we'll move into moving to slide 31, the title page of ETO and ETO support. Moving to the next slide, I have a brief agenda. What I'm going to start is by reviewing some of the very basic ETO functions. We'll discuss some of the issues with doing terminal and user-related names and considerations, and what are the manual steps that we need to do to be able to implement the extended terminal option of IMS. In this way, what we'll determine is how much work is this really going to take in order to be able to do the implementation. And then we'll take a look at IMS ETO support, which is intended to remove a lot of this work and make it an implementation that's capable, that can be done by a person that perhaps does not have assembler skills or simply is overworked to the point where they would rather really not do it that way. A lot of organizations, if they had the choice of implementing ETO manually or not using that process at all, frequently are looking at not doing it. So we're looking at trying to make this a lot easier. So moving to slide 33, why would anyone want to go to the extended terminal option in the first place? What ETO provides you is improved system availability, because you then no longer have to worry about adding VTAM terminals and users to IMS, which means that you don't have to do sysgens in order to be able to do this. It improves IMS security. Output messages are tied to a user now rather than to a physical terminal. Reduces system definition time. There's less macros required to define the terminal network, which makes this easier for system programmers and unskilled people to be able to maintain their IMS connectivity. Reducing system checkpoint restart time. Resources allocated when actually required and deleted when no longer required. Automatic log-off and sign-off support. And then, from an ETO perspective, dynamic terminals do not support Smooth, and IMS version 9 is the last IMS version to support Smooth. Some other issues, application programs that use specific L-term names sometimes require some customization. So moving to slide 34, some of the issues that we see, static definition if we're dealing with the P-term or nodes to L-term relationship is statically defined in a static definition. The L-term names are defined at an IMS gen. Node and L-term control blocks are created at IMS startup. And when we're starting to look at doing an ETO implementation, we need to understand what existing structures you have. What are your naming conventions and your relationships? And is there things that your application programs are sensitive to? Are they looking for specific information on the L terms? Slide 35, when we're looking at ETO being created, now the relationship from node to user is dynamic, and the relationship from L term to user is dynamic. Resources are defined at logon and at sign-on, or when output is queued to the L-term definition. In slide 36, looking at ETO activation, SMU and ETO, they can coexist, but they're mutually exclusive. SMU is only used for static terminals. L-term-based security is not available under RATCAP. However, and we'll get into this a little bit later, ETO support does provide for security. Static and dynamic terminals can also coexist. If the static terminals exist, they will be honored. And again, dynamic terminals require RATCAP. A few different things on how to implement putting ETO equals yes on the execution parameter. We need to be able to worry about our automatic sign-off and log-off times. We have to define descriptors, have to be specified either manually or created from an existing IMS system, and determining what has to be RATCAP checked. Moving to slide 37. In order to implement ETO, we need to select model descriptors for the logon and sign-on. This replaces our communication-related macros. The main descriptors we need to worry about are logon and users. Slide 38, we now go into the need for user exit. Basically, what we're dealing with is the customization. All of these exits are required to be written in assembler. There's an initialization user exit, which creates the user data sets used by other installation exits. There's a log-off user exit, so a log-on user exit. So what is the descriptor that I'm going to be using? Am I going to allow or disallow log-on based on the given information? Do I want to create or modify user data? The sign-off user exit, and then the sign-on user exit. On slide 39, we have the output creation exit, a command authorization exit, and a greeting message exit. So there's a lot of exits that need to have things written in assembler, which complicates definitely the implementation. On slide 40, we're going into where we need to be able to put this information. The system definition descriptors that are built during system definition are stored in the proclive members. Your user-defined descriptors written to override your system definition defaults are also stored in the proclive. Log-on user and MSC descriptors, which are loaded at IMS initialization using the input from proclive. There's the log-on and log-off exit routines. All of this needs to be put in the correct place in order for you to be able to implement ETO. On slide 41, we're going to look for a moment as what the difference is between static and dynamic terminals. A static terminal is going to be predefined in your system definition. Dynamic is not predefined. Static, the resource is always present. Dynamic is created and deleted dynamically as required. In static, a message queue is associated with a physical terminal. In dynamic, the message queue is associated with a user, which increases security because if a terminal is used by more than one physical person, if someone else came back, they could get a message that was not related to them. In static, sign-on is optional. In dynamic, sign-on is a requirement, which makes sense when we consider that things are associated with users, so therefore we need to be able to sign on and sign off. IMS terminal definition defines terminal characteristics, and in the dynamic, both the VTAM mode table entry for the terminal and the logon descriptors are the focal points. In static, logon descriptors aren't used. And in dynamic, they're used to create the resources that do not exist or marked as temporary. Slide 42, we have some considerations when we're looking at naming considerations. LTERM equals user ID. ETO considers the ideal design, but almost never one uses that approach. Move now on to slide 43 and start looking at ETO support tools. ETO support is a front end to the existing extended terminal option. It's going to simplify and speed up the process of implementing ETO. It lets you get the full power of ETO without having to maintain ETO descriptors and user exits. It's user-friendly, has both an online and a batch interface, and lets you set global options and override options for specific terminals or user IDs. On slide 44, allows you to support SLU 1 console, SLU 2, and SLU T devices. It's going to perform the auto sign-on by building the user LTERM control blocks. You don't have any need to enter an IMA ims/sign command. It's going to supply a user L-term name for a specific terminal. You can specify up to 8 L-terms for each SLU2, SLU1, or SLU-T device. You can use masking and wildcards. You're able to supply an L-term name for a specific user ID, or again, up to 8 L-terms for each user ID. It will support the cleanup of conversations and reset terminal status and dequeue messages at sign-off time. It manages its own and user-specified exits with direct reload and allows you to provide command security checking at the keyword level. So let's move into what this looks like. On slide 45 are the controls that are offered. There's capability of controlling logon, so you can select the logon descriptors for terminals, set the ALOT values based on the terminal, override network defined screen size. At sign-on, you can select or customize the sign-on process and the sign-on complete process, supply the user and L-term names, and set a response and message delete options based on the terminal and user ID. If you want multiple sign-ons with the same user ID, you can either do this using a user ID suffixing routine or by supplying a specific user L-term name for a specific terminal. At sign-off, you can have it do cleanup conversations, reset terminal status, and dequeue messages. Command authorization, you have to do command plus keyword level using RACF or ETO tables. For ETO, SLU2, static, and SLU2, APTC, OTMA, or AOI. Some alternative exits can be specified based on the terminal, user ID, or L-term. And all of these can be dynamically changed without restarting IMS. Now let's take a look at some of the screens that are available. On slide 46, you see the main screen that comes with ETO support grouped in logical manners. First of all, the first section going through the customize options. And then the view options, being able to view all of the definitions that you currently have set. A test facility, being able to test your translation table. Refresh options, letting you be able to refresh your routing data or perform a table refresh. Also, the capability to be able to reload the IMS exit. On slide 47, we have now moved into the global sign-on options and what you want to be able to use in that process, whether or not you want to use the IMS default. So for DFS 3649, whether or not you're going to use a message. DFS 3650, whether you want to use the IMS default, blank screen, or you want to have a user mod, or have your own message. Slide 48, we're looking at the global processing options that are available to be set. And as you can see, everything is via an ISPF option. You select what settings you want to have, and then the exit routines are generated and implemented without your having to do any of the coding. So in here, we can choose whether or not we want sign-off cleanup, dynamic transactions. Over on the right-hand side, if I want user suffixing, what technique I want to have used, and if I have SysFlex terminal management, how I want that handled, LastPass recovery, conversation recovery. On slide 50, look at device global options. Continuing now, we're looking specifically at the SLU 2. If I've selected that, then these are the options I have available to me. On slide 51, we're going back to the device options again, and then on slide 52, we've gone back to the primary menu, and we've now going to select the LU name specific options, as you can see on the command line. And slide 53, it puts me now into the SLU 2 member list, so I can select any one of these entries to be able to edit them or delete them. Slide 54 now specified a specific LU name, and I can specify what process I want for that one, what the user and L term names are, the security group, what response options, what message delete options I want for that LU. Moving back to the primary menu on slide 55, I'm now going to go view my user-specific options. So I'm going for command 4. In slide 56, I see the list of user ID members. I'm now going to select a specific member. And on slide 57, I now see that user ID and what settings I have, specific settings I have set for that specific user ID. On slide 58, I'm back at the primary menu. Now we're going to go take a look at the command security options. And on slide 59, we're now in the security options where we can specify whether or not we're going to use RACF return code, a user code, or use security group. And I'm able to set that for my dynamic terminals, security, static terminals, no TMA devices. We move to slide 60. We now see where we can secure our command keywords. I can select a specific command for processing. Slide 61. I now see all the command keyword activations, whether or not I want to activate those, add or delete them. And on slide 62, we're back at our main screen again. And we're selecting G, the security group command. And on slide 63, we're going through all of the screens that would be involved. On slide 64, we're now back again at our primary menu. We're now going to go look at the printer L-term definitions. And as you can see so far, everything has been, there's been no manual coding. Everything is covered via an ISPF option. So with slide 65, we now see a printer L-term setup, the L-term name specified, what the node name would be, and what should happen as far as the message delete option. On slide 66. We're now back again at the primary menu. Now we're going to go take a look at error messages. Slide 67, we have the return codes that can come up. And I'm able to select any of these return codes and set what the message should come out if I get those return codes. On slide 68, we're back again at our primary menu. And now we're going to choose option R. And option R is the ability to reload my IMS exit. I've gone through all of my customization options, and in doing so, I've created internal tables in ETO, and I'm now prepared to be able to create the exits. On slide 69, I see my exit choices, and I can choose which exits I want to have reloaded at this time. This will be done dynamically. Again, as I said earlier, there is no need at any time to be able to recycle IMS. On slide 70, in summary, ETO is definitely an important feature of IMS and where IMS is going in the direction we would like it to be. IMS ETO support allows you to be able to do your implementation, your tailoring, and manage without having to worry about doing any assembler coding by doing it very easily with screens and selections. This makes the job much easier. Slide 71, I want to thank everyone who has attended this conference call. I'm now ready to open up for questions, if anyone has any.
Thank you, Ms. LeBlanc. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1. For those of you who have joined us on speakerphones, please remember to turn off your mute button before signaling for a question. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, that's star 1, and we'll pause for a moment. And ladies, we have no questions at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back over to you for any additional or closing. Actually, looks like someone just queued up. One moment. Kaveh Harabad.
Yeah. Sorry I came in late. I have several questions, actually, if you don't mind. One of the things you mentioned earlier was that the high-performance assistant tool currently supports the modblocks gens only. What about the other types of gens that you would want to do for control blocks and so on?
I'm sorry, I may have been speaking about the version 1 capabilities.
I see.
Not what is in version 2. Version 2 does fully support all of the gens that you need to do. There's no restriction in that area.
I see. Okay.
I'm sorry if
that's the impression.
Didn't explain that properly.
Yeah, that's the impression I got from the foils. My next question: in creating, let's say, defining new transaction codes or even copying existing definitions and changing them, what if I copied, for example, I wanted to have a PSP with multiple transaction codes. How many screens do I have to go through to add the additional transaction codes? Or what's the process there?
I'm just trying to mentally think of the screens to...
I've got it as foil number 13. I kept track of all the foils.
Well, I didn't show, actually, every single screen that the tool has.
I realize.
On the top of my head, I can't think of exactly how many screens that would work out to be.
So basically, the screens are repeated until at some point the user says I'm done, and all that information is recorded then.
That's correct.
Okay. But the yeah, okay, fair enough. The other third question is regarding the cloning thing on 1225, if for reference. I suppose if you wanted to, you have three systems or two systems. It doesn't matter how many, but you want to merge the definitions at some point and make them all look the same.
Yes.
Now there could be common transactions or definitions in the in those three systems, but they some of them are slightly different from the others.
Okay.
Let's say a transaction might be response mode in one, non-response mode in the other, but maybe all the other parameters are the same. How is that conflict resolved?
It's the conflict that it comes with a number of control cards where you can determine how you want the conflict to be resolved, whether or not you want it to go to the highest level.
How is that determined, for example?
Again, it's going to be, just give me 2 seconds here while we're talking, and I'm going to go take a look at the actual control cards, because the control cards allow you a number of different options for doing that kind of resolution.
I see.
Whether or not you want it determined based on one specific system as being the master, or whether or not, and in some cases, if it cannot, it will just report on it and then let you make the decision. And you can do that via a second run with control cards to specify which way you want it handled.
Right.
Yeah, we do recognize that there's going to be, sometimes there's going to be conflicts that it can't make the decision for you.
Okay.
Is there any other questions?
Yes. My last question, I think I dropped the ball on the FOIL number, but there was some mention either in the high-performance SysGen or EQ, I can't remember. There was some, yeah, I know, it's two large products, but there was some mention made to about APPC traffic going between IMS systems or at least between the HP. The tool itself and the IMS systems themselves.
Yeah, that would have been high performance systems.
Right. Now, what if the IMS systems are located at geographically different locations? How does that work?
And do you currently have connections now?
Yes.
How are you communicating?
Yes and no. I don't know.
Now?
Pardon me?
How are you communicating?
Well, in terms of the GENs, there's a particular client who has that kind of set up, actually, too.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have fancy utilities to do the work that you're proposing to do
with
that tool. So basically, when we cut a ResLive, we just basically transmit it electronically somehow to the other site.
Okay.
And that's how we do it that way. But there was no dynamic type of polling or querying or anything like that happens.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I'd have to double check with the developer as to whether or not there's another approach that he would put into place or suggest.
Right.
This is a question I could actually, one thing I wanted to make sure I mentioned before the end of my presentation. For anyone who is going to IMS Tech Conference, the developer of this product will be there and will be presenting in far more detail than what I presented due to my time limitations. And certainly, I can get the answer back to your question, but if anyone else has any more specific environmental questions, we can get them answered there.
Okay.
I will go, if you can give me an email address.
Sure.
I can certainly get a specific answer to you for that.
Sure. Do you want it now or later after the meeting?
I'll turn to the person controlling the call whether or not that can be picked up directly by her.
I will do so, Ms. LeBlanc.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
That way we're not publicizing your email address across the
internet. Oh, I don't mind as long as I don't get spam.
I don't want you to blame this call on getting spam.
Okay, thanks very much.
Okay. Is there any other questions from us?
Yes, we do have one question remaining in our queue from Jeff Pierce.
Hello, Jeff.
Oh, hi, how you doing? Just a couple of questions. On the exits, it wasn't real clear, I guess, when you were going through it. Is this process using these panels, does that do away with actually coding these exits?
Yes, it does. Totally.
Okay. That wasn't real clear to me right at first when I was going through it with you, or when I saw it. But okay.
The whole idea is that we recognize that assembler skills are slowly disappearing, and this offers an option that allows the exits to be created without your having to write any of the exits.
Okay.
Okay.
The other question, this is a separately priced product. It's not part of the IMS base code?
That's correct. It's not part of the base code. There's two issues when we're dealing with ETO. ETO itself is a feature of IMS, which is separately priced. So normally if you are licensed for IMS and you previously did not have ETO, you would have to have that feature code added.
Now, we have ETO,
okay.
But we still need to...
IMS ETO support is a separately priced product, so that would have to be purchased separately.
So the product is called High Performance SysGen?
Oh, okay. There's two products I talked about today. High Performance SysGen does all the SysGen work.
And the exits
ETO
also.
Support does the ETO exits.
ETO support.
Yes.
And is that different than what we have today, ETO?
Yes, it is a separate product.
Oh, okay. So we have ETO support and then HP SysGen. Okay.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
No problem. Any other questions?
There are no further questions in our queue, ladies. I'll turn the conference back over to you.
All right, thank you. I want to thank everyone again for joining us on today's call. We will be continuing having a series of calls in the future. We found this a very productive and easy way to be able to let you know what's happening in IBM and certainly in the IMS areas. And just a reminder, again, that we have IMS Tech Conference coming up in San Jose. And that's really, for us in the IMS world, an ideal location since our labs are just down the road, so to speak, which means that we certainly have a lot of developers that are going to be present at Tech Conference. So it will be an exciting place to be. I want to turn it over to Diane McCullum to allow her to close off.
Okay, thank you, everybody, and if you have any additional questions, please don't hesitate to email me. You have my email address, and we'll get back to you with the answers. Again, thanks again for attending, and have a great day. Bye-bye.
That does conclude today's conference call. Thank you again for your participation.